outside the box of religious obligation lies a road less travelled, into the heart of the father's affection. Slinging freedom all over the place, this is the God Journey. The God Journey. The God Journey.
Well, welcome to the God Journey Midweek. This is kind of a new thing we're doing when it comes up. And this week had a lot of things we wanted to talk about before Easter. So we got two shows in this week, plus maybe the after show. There's a group of us that met for an after show. We kind of put it out on the blog and then had a number of people want to join us. Not as many joined us as wanted the link, but we had quite a good number all the way from Germany, UK, all over the US, and even someone up at 6 a.m. in New Zealand to join us. So we just had a chance to talk about the pandemic and Psalm 91 and that podcast specifically, but also had a great time just to connect with some other people and get to know folks from all over the place. So it was a fun time. And Kyle Rice is joining me today. Hi, Kyle.
Hi, how are you, Wayne?
From Torrington, I was going to say Wisconsin, but I think it's Wyoming. I got my W straight. Torrington,
it
Wyoming.
It is Wyoming. Yeah, yes, definitely not Wisconsin.
Well, you're both cold, so same kind of deal, I guess. But
yeah, but we have mountains.
Anyway, we also had a lady from Wyoming join us for the after show. So we had a great time chatting with her, and she was telling us how great it was to be in Wyoming where the social distancing is a way of life. So yeah, you guys doing okay up there?
Yeah, it's... I would say our experience is very similar to the bulk of people in Wyoming. We don't really see a whole lot of people. So it makes it really nice. My wife and I go out on walks pretty much every day, and we get to see a few people every once in a while, but they're very courteous and they stay 6 feet away and say hello from a distance. And, but for the most part, I am lucky enough to live in a state where I don't have to encounter people if I don't want to encounter people.
Ah, well, Sarah and I have been laying low. We go out once a week to do shopping and get some grocery stuff. And then last week I had an extra outing because I had to have a doctor's appointment for a physical checkup, which I would have normally skipped this year and thought they would. I would think the medical people would be busy. I was expecting them to cancel the appointment. They didn't. And I decided to go through with it because I don't have a doctor. I lost mine to retirement in December. And so I had this appointment to find me a new doc. And I figured it was time to go see him, at least in case I need some of my medications renewed. I've got a doc that can order it because I currently don't. So met with him last week, and Sarah was a little concerned about me going. So, I went with a mask and gloves and all that. But you're having a physical appointment, so you're getting all scoped out pretty good. And came home and stripped in the garage, threw it in the washing machine, and came in and took a shower right away with Sarah more than 6 feet away. So I got all that done. So I like him. It looks like I got a new doc that's going to last me a while, and everything checks out physically. But had to go back out this morning for a blood test. So they're, again, with medical people, and they're poking and probing, and hope you guys are germ-free and, whatever. But it's got to be done. So,
well, that's the tough part is finding a new doc. You can't go telehealth. You actually have to go there, and they actually have to check you out in person.
Yeah, you do. I would love them to do the blood test by internet. That'd be awesome.
That would be amazing. That would be very nice.
I'm a little wimpy when it comes to the whole blood test thing. I almost didn't get married because it required a blood test. That's how freaky I am about the whole thing. And even though I've had a lot more in the last few years, when I went in, I said, look, I'm a wimp about this. Just be gentle. You don't worry. You won't know a thing. And I'm going, yeah, right. That you always say that. I never felt the needle go into my arm. This is the best lady I've ever had take my blood. So I wrote her name down. I got her ID. No, I'm kidding. I want to come to you every time. I got to come back and do this. So,
complete side note, but why did you have to get a blood test for getting married?
That was a requirement in California. Make sure you're not diseased.
Wow.
Yeah. That's okay. Been true. That was 45 years ago almost. So
that I had no idea that was ever a thing.
Yeah, it was. So I got a blood test for that way back then. And then over recent years, it's kind of like a yearly, maybe twice yearly thing. I've got to have a blood test.
So what was some of the conversations that were coming up in the after party? I really enjoyed the conversation that you had with Bob on Psalm 91. And there was definitely some things that came up for me as well. But what were some things that, or some of the questions that were coming up with the people at the after party?
I don't know. It was a lot of questions. It was just a lot of people sharing their own experience and how they're navigating this. We talked a lot about trust and how God builds trust and what it means to lean into that trust, and even recognizing times when that trust isn't working and I've got fear going on in my life. And then how do I negotiate back into trust or find my way to let that trust grow? So a lot of talk about that. Jeff the pilot joined us, so we had some of the stuff from his podcast came up as well. And so, yeah, it was just a great time. A lot of interaction from people. So we're going to post that up probably tomorrow after this podcast airs, so people want to go back and listen to the after show. We're not calling it an after party. There were no, you know, we weren't have cake. There was nothing to make a party out of it, but we had an after show. Just thought with Zoom and the capability, I'm learning how to use this thing. I thought it might be fun to just see how people would react to the podcast. And it didn't stay specifically on that podcast so much, but it was a lot of fun to talk with folks like that. And we just said at the end of it, you know, if you want to, was it helpful? You guys want to do this again? And the feeling was, yeah, pretty good. So we probably, I'm not going to do it every week, but now and then if we have a podcast that feels especially poignant, we might throw up a after party or after show. Now you got me doing it. See, Kyle?
Well, every time you get together with people, Wayne, it's a party. So I don't know why it's not the after party.
I don't know. Yeah, we could call it. It just doesn't seem like a party, man. Nobody's, we have nothing to drink, nothing to eat, nothing to, yeah, just. You know, everybody hunkering down and trying to get through this as a world. And this is supposed to be the next 2 weeks we're being warned is going to be the toughest in America. And I don't know if that's true in my particular county. It seems pretty light here still, but parts of California are very, very, very much hot zones. And certainly New York, New Jersey, Connecticut area is so, and Louisiana. So we'll see how we negotiate this, but interesting time.
That it is. Did anything come up in the after show about that conversation about false hope and some people wanting to hold on to the false hope versus wanting to actually know? You made a comment that you would want to know that as things are being processed and things are coming up, that you would want to know that there was going to be some struggles or there was going to be some adversity. And as I was listening to the podcast, something that just came up for me is I felt like there's a lot of people that kind of like on the movie, The Matrix, they would rather not take the red pill. They would want the blue pill and they would want to stay in the matrix and they would not want to know that they are in the matrix or that they are experiencing any of that false hope.
I know that's true. I know there are people like that, but honestly, it makes my heart hurt to even hear it, you know, because we talked about Psalm 91. It protects us from all harm. And would people prefer to believe that even if it wasn't true in the sense that we'd never get sick. All people who love Jesus are going to be healthy all the time. Never no trial, never no difficulty. And that's kind of where the psalm aims people, even though I think where the psalm really aims people is God is a certain refuge no matter what you're in the middle of. God is the place to hang out. God's the place to lean into because he's a refuge. And no ultimate harm befalls my life, but doesn't mean that I don't go through harmful situations or circumstances. And the question was, you know, do maybe people like this false comfort? Maybe it's like a little, you know, blanket that a kid has that he's comforted by having this blanket with him. And it doesn't really do anything, but as long as he thinks he does, he's comforted by it, right? And would people really think, yeah, this protects me. I'll never die of the coronavirus because of Psalm 21 and I'm claiming it for me. And then you die of coronavirus, Psalm 91 notwithstanding. And would you prefer to think you're safe up until the very moment you die? And then you went, oh, I guess I wasn't. And then you had all that comfort. Then you have heaven. So I guess it's cool. Or would you rather negotiate the reality? And for me, yeah, I'd rather negotiate the reality and learn what trust is to lean into a real God, not lean into the expectation of the outcome I want. But I think you're right. I think there are an awful lot of people, given the choice, would prefer false comfort.
Well, and I think part of that is that in order to develop the type of trust you're talking about, that requires us to actually step in and take a look at our fears, to press into those places in our lives that we have fear or we have doubt or we have concerns or anxiety. And instead of the false hope where it doesn't challenge us, it doesn't require us to step outside of our comfort zone.
And I don't understand people who don't want to negotiate reality, you know? One of the things I read from the Gospels is the heart that hungers for what's true, not the heart that just hungers to be comforted. Because I think that makes you a setup for any charlatan that wants to claim revelation from God in the body of Christ. If you're looking for what makes you most comfortable rather than for what's really true, you're right. You escape that need to grow your trust, that need to lean into God and let him find you in your anxiety and fear. And instead, you just kind of keep it all at bay. I told the story in the after show of a woman I met in Oklahoma who was, her son, high school son, was asking me some questions. We're sitting over dinner and about this virus. And it was just starting then. It wasn't a big deal. It was just kind of coming out of China and, you know, it would be coming to the U.S. and just all those concerns, but nothing really had happened yet. And his mom just said, well, don't worry, honey, we're under the covenant. We're under the blood and we're fine and nothing's ever going to happen to us. And so I just looked at her and I said, so let me ask you a question. Do you think everybody in China who's died from this virus is a non-believer? And she looked at me with that moment of, oh gosh, I don't want to go down that road. I don't even want to think that thought. So she just turned to her son and said, don't worry, we know how to claim it. So it was, here's a chance to talk about something. And you could see she didn't want to. Whatever comfort she was getting from her belief, she didn't want her son to even have a second thought about. And I think people who want that are, if they let themselves think about it, they're horribly afraid. And they're a sitting duck for, like I said, false teaching and false whatever. And I watched her just bury it for him. We're not going there. If there are, they didn't know how to claim it. That was kind of the view. Unfortunately, it's a lot of Christians that believe that if you get sick, then you just don't know how to claim it. You don't know how to work the God with the scriptures that we work the God with. And it's just a horrible thing to do to people. So, yeah, I'm a truth nut, but I'm with you. I think there's a lot of people that would just have somebody tell them everything's fine. They'd be the ones that might have cancer and the doctor doesn't tell them. I can't do anything about it anyway, so might as well enjoy as much of your life as you can. Because the cancer diagnosis would be so overwhelming, I guess, that they would not be able to enjoy the rest of their life. I would rather know if somebody else around me does that, you know, things are serious and I'd want to say my goodbyes to people. I'd want to have moments with folks I love. Rather than kind of be duped into some false security that then I drop off the planet without knowing it and going, gee, that wasn't helpful. What about you?
I would say that I am very similar to you in regards to my desire to want to know. But I think that there were also times in my life where I enjoyed the false comfort because I didn't know that the life that Christ offered was actually good. The life that I knew was rule management, behavior modification, sin management. That was the type of faith or that was the type of relationship with God that I knew. And so I knew how to operate in that system very, very well, but I didn't know how good the life was outside of that. My fear was I was going to bump into another angry father figure. And so I might as well continue to toe the line and continue to navigate life the way that I knew how to navigate life and not upset the boat, not rock it, not cause any waves.
Yeah, I can understand why people would get, but I think the more we get to know God, and I do think an important part of our growth is to have a heart for the truth. You know, the whole woman at the well moment where he says, you know, the people that are genuine in spirit and in truth, that's the kind the Father seeks to be his worshipers, which I think God wants us all. But the hearts that seem to lean into God's reality are people that are willing to face what's true, even if what's true is uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Because some of my uncomfort is often created by the lies I may have about God in my head or the lie. But if I don't lean into that and let God reveal the truth and the truth invite me to greater freedom, then we don't get to know the freedom. We don't get to know that adventure. So,
but my guess is that you experienced love from him before a lot of that pressing into the uncomfort came. Would you say that was the case, that you had encountered some of his love or at least a snippet of the experience of his love in your life where you recognized, hey, there might be something here that's worth actually pressing into or leaving my comfort zone?
I don't know how to, I mean, I go back even to before I really became aware of how deeply loved I was by God. Even back in the early days, my prayers were always, God, I want to know you as you really are. Even if you're the big, scary, demanding, I've got to, you know, if that's how you really are, I want to know you. I don't want to know Wayne's creation, Wayne's illusion of God. I've never wanted to live there. Not that I haven't had illusions about him, because I have. But I really don't want to live there. I want to live inside God's goodness and his reality and where God is stern and there are, you can't read scripture and not know there are moments God is stern. There's moments where God's deeply serious about things, but I want to know that part of him inside his love. It doesn't discount his love, but I think that that heart, that hunger for what's true has been in my heart all along. Even before I knew he was as safe a God to be near as I found him to be. Obviously, knowing him that way now makes it easier. It does. When I hit one of those real fearful moments or, you know, doing something. Just, you know, the Bible story, the Jesus story I'm doing with my grandkids. I've told my daughter, I haven't had that knot in the pit of my stomach in front of a group of people. I haven't had that in decades, maybe. I do now before we hit that record with I'm talking to my grandkids via internet about the Bible and I'm wanting to engage them and make it interesting. And do I have the right tools and insight here to do that? I'm more, and I wouldn't say nervous. I'm more, gosh, what would be the word? Cause I'm more on edge about that than anything else I've done recently, because it's such a risky thing to, and then we're sharing it. If you're just my grandkids, I'd be fine. But then we're sharing it online with anybody who wants to watch it. Like, oh my gosh. But I guess just, I'm okay with discomfort. Yeah. I feel it, but I'm okay with it. And then to hear that it's being just some of the fruit of it already from people, then I go, yeah, it's worth challenging my comfort zone. You know, I'm not a pain guy. I don't love pain, but I've learned to embrace discomfort in the face of whatever else God may want to show me or whatever else God may invite me into. If I just stay to the safe roads, I think that the adventure somehow ends. You know, somebody said, if you don't do something every day that puts that knot in the pit of your stomach, I'm like, okay, that's been true of a lot of my journey. It has not been true the last few years. I don't have a knot in the pit of my stomach about most things I do, but talking to three little kids about the Bible, yeah, that'll do it. At least it
especially
is right
remotely.
Now. Yeah, especially remotely, you bet. So we were going to talk about today, with Easter coming up, it'll be this Sunday. And almost every congregation in America is going to be closed on that day. I mean, every religious building is shuttered for this coronavirus. And I just thought, man, it'd be good to talk about, because the things that you're hearing about this from people are a little unsettling to me about how we view what church is, in air quotes, what the church is. And how people are responding to this, like it's the end of the world if my church can't meet on a Sunday morning. And even the National Association of Evangelicals, along with the Christianity Today, put out a statement about this. And they were asking to cancel or not to cancel. Well, that kind of has been taken out of their hands now. The state has pretty much canceled you. You don't get to make this decision, although I've got a story to tell you. Not everybody's listening, right? But their statement was, the gathered worship service is central to the church's identity, and therefore cancellation seems to trample on more than tradition. It can feel like a threat to the church's existence. And when I read that, going, people really believe that? I'm thinking we're playing the Sunday morning game. Like, yeah, it's important. Yeah, you need to be committed. You need to be here. But none of us really believe that that's the church. And if we didn't gather in that way, the church in the world would vanish. But there are people who actually do.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
That depressed me.
Well, and I think that this whole process is shining a light on that, because I think that throughout the last several years, I've had a lot of conversations as I've gone on my own journey in regards to my engagement with either a traditional Sunday morning gathering or exploring something outside of that. And a lot of my family actually falls into the category that believes that the Sunday morning gathering is absolutely central to the Christian faith, and that if you don't go to that Sunday morning gathering, that A, you're not going to be in God's will, and B, if we aren't holding those Sunday morning gatherings, then the church will become non-existent. That is the church. And there's been some lip service that's been paid. Oh no, we know that that we as the believers make up the body, that it's not a building, it's not the gathering, and yet when you strip away the gathering, then all of a sudden the genuine beliefs about what role the gathering plays start to come to the surface. And it's been challenging, because there's been some really hard conversations that I've had with friends and family and community revolving around this conversation. And I'm a little surprised at how deeply ingrained it still is, honestly, in my area.
Yeah, I'm just surprised that people really believe the church's existence is at stake. I know people believe the commitment's important. You belong to church by going to that. But if we have to not meet for 5 or 6 months because we've got to contain this coronavirus, or 2 or 3 months, that somehow the reality of the church in the world is at stake. Or as this statement said, canceling in-person worship services is not the same as canceling worship. Oh, okay. I don't like the way worship is used in any of that sentence, you know, because worship isn't singing songs in a big group of people. Worship is the way we live our lives under Father, and the way we live either brings glory to Him or it doesn't. It has nothing to do with singing songs. I mean, praise and adoration is great. It's a great thing for the body of Christ to do when they're together. But to think, well, worship ends if, and they're saying it doesn't, but just the fact that you have to deny that it doesn't says, what do you really believe about this stuff?
And I think, again, that the fact that that question is being posed or that that statement has to come out is very revealing. Because, you know, for me, one of the big conversations was there's several people that I know that are in ministry, professional ministry, in air quotes, again, of some kind, and their livelihood is strapped to the Sunday morning gathering and the event that they're doing and making sure that that's happening. And now their entire world, their entire foundation, their orientation of life is now being challenged. Because if their doors are shuttered for a certain period of time and they're not getting donations over that 3, 4, 5 month period, and they've got salaries of a couple $100,000 every single month because of their staff team, then yeah, it may no longer be in existence.
When people ask me why we got the church expression that we do in the world, why do we have this big gathering Sunday morning, buildings, staff, programming, how do we get there? And I always say, I think it's the business model. Mm-hmm. I think that's the way you've got to work it if you need income on the part of anybody who needs it, for somebody to be in full-time ministry, for us to have a building that we can use the rec center and all the other things we use it for. It really that's the business model. And I really do think that's the challenge. When you wrestle with the business model, but nobody likes to talk about the church as a business or a corporation. So we kind of talk around that or ignore it completely. And we lap on to really important spiritual reasons why, if you're not in a Sunday morning mini concert, mini lecture, then the whole nature of the church could go awry, even though Jesus did nothing in his life that looked like this. And he didn't teach his disciples to do something that looked like, look, every Sunday in the morning, have this concert lecture thing. That's what keeps the church together. There's nothing, not in Paul, not in anybody. We know they got together. But it wasn't like that we get together. It wasn't at all like to watch a performance, right? Jesus went to the synagogue, but that's not even a service like we do service. Our service has, you know, been morphing out of the Middle Ages, but it's the guy on stage, whether it's the priest doing the mass, whether it's a pastor doing the sermon, that's kind of where we've said that's where the life of Jesus flows. We've got to be there. It's the means of grace. It's essential. It's all. I always thought we knew better. I always said, okay, yeah, we're doing that. I get it. Even when I did it, we get it. But I don't really believe it. I don't really believe, and I never taught it because I just seemed disingenuous to teach something that I didn't believe in. So I wouldn't teach it that way, but I know people who do.
Yeah.
And now we're saying, okay, just don't meet. And there's really important health reasons why you're not going to put 250 people in a building or even more than 10 right now. Really, really good reasons. It's not like small stuff. And yet, it's just driving people nuts. This is one of the things on this statement from Christianity Today, and I'll link it at the bottom of the podcast so people can go read it yourselves. He said, we will not be passing the peace with hugs, but rather with texts and phone calls. Are these modes inferior? Yes. Will they be acceptable to the Lord? That question right there. Like, if we do this wrong, God's... What? I mean, what's the view of God here? You, instead of saying to you face to face, Kyle, God bless you, man. May God just be in your life praying for you today. Whether doing it video or doing it somehow is less acceptable to God. I mean, I'd rather be in a room with you. Yes.
Yeah.
But to God, is it, oh no, that doesn't count. It's not acceptable to me. I'm angry now because you talked to, you talked to Kyle on a video chat. No, there's just no way. It's got to be face to face. It's like, what kind of God is this?
You have to triple the quota of the amount of conversations that you're having remotely because the in-person ones are more important to God than the ones that are remotely.
So it's a third less effective to do it remotely. So you got to do three and that makes up for it. Because that has a real healthy view of God in it as well. I woke up yesterday morning, Sarah and I, and we're expecting some rain in the area. And we're trying to, our two outings a day as we take the dogs for a walk together. So we're checking the rainstorms to see when's our window to get a morning walk in and when's our one to get an afternoon walk in. And I'm looking at a pastor that I know in this community is on the news for LA. He's having a communion service on Sunday afternoon. And it's like, what? And yeah, and he was also a city councilman in this city, was mayor a year ago. And then his term ran out. So he's a city council member and he's going to gather. And I'm like, what are you talking about? I mean, I know this guy. I don't know him well. He's not a close friend or anything. But I was like, what are you doing? And he said, well, we can't let them win. I'm like, what are you? He's on the news. Well, who's them winning? We can't let them call liquor stores and cannabis dispensaries as essential and the church as non-essential. So we're going to meet to demonstrate our resistance. Now, they did it with a lot of social. They had a sermon online at 11, which I always find funny. We're into the sermon online at 11. And then from 1 to 3, you need to come. And they were encouraging everyone, you need to come because we want to make a stand. And so you could come in the parking lot. And their building that seats 400, they had like 10 chairs set up. So only 10 people could be inside at a time. And they were all spread out. Oh. And then you went to a table and pulled the elements off where no one's handing them to you. But all of this was because we can't, this is his statement, which I thought was really strange. Our goal is not to put anyone in the community in danger. Our goal is to fulfill our religious requirement. Now, this is a guy that knows better than that kind of language. What the new covenant has religious requirements in it? I beg to differ. And I think you know better than that. And then he said, if communion isn't essential and the church isn't essential, then Christ isn't essential. And I can't live with that. So look where he went from my meeting on a Sunday morning to Christ being essential, that's what we're fighting for, to keep Christ essential. And I thought, this is the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard. And this is not some, you know, Rodney Howard Brown guy in Florida is going to get arrested for having a service anyway. He's not that kind of guy. He resigned from the city council because he didn't want all that reflecting on them. He took a whole lot of community pushback of, why are you making this place more dangerous? Why are you inviting your people out of their homes, in their cars? They're at least they're doing something more to connect with people on a day. And the whole reason is because we can't let them call liquor stores essential and cannabis dispensaries essential. And the church, which he's got, not the meeting of the church, not the congregational meeting, because it's very different. Four people in a liquor store is a very different health risk than 500 people in a building. Why, I don't know, or even 10 people. Why do we, and you want to, so, but you don't want to do it because the faithful really need a touch from God that only you can give. We need it to, in the middle of this coronavirus, to make a statement that the church is essential. And what underlies that is the meeting is essential to the church, that if we don't traverse the same geographical space on a Sunday, the church is somehow diminished. And that's where I just can't jump on board with these guys. I don't believe that even for a second. And I think the teaching of it or even the encouragement of it borders on idolatry. That's what I think. That's where I really struggle with, you're going to go on. And so what is it that underlies this guy's thinking? Because these conclusions he's making are pretty senseless. And I think he even knows that. So what's going on underneath that? And is it a quest for publicity? Is it, you know, other people, I need to be on the news. So if I do something outrageous like this, I'll get on the news. Is it just to make a political statement in the midst of a coronavirus? Do you really want to make that statement? We've got to prove the church is essential. by breaking the guidelines we were being given. They had police deputies out there to make sure. I mean, they went out there to make sure this is not going to violate the standards. And, you know, they watched it all unfold. They all advised him, don't do this. This is not worth doing. This encourages the wrong thing. He's going to do it anyway. And I just thought, what is it publicity? Is it really to make a political stand? Is it I'm afraid people will lose their dependency on my thing? And I, you know, I know guys that struggle with that. I struggled with that when I was a pastor. You do anything to break that habit, that need, and maybe you're working yourself out of a job, which we all said we were trying to do anyway, but none of us really wanted to do it. Not if the income flow would change. Or is it the money? Were there offering plates on the communion table yesterday? And if there were, and I don't know, I read the newspaper article about it today. They didn't say. But then if there were, I'd be going, okay, this is really then about money. This is, I need you to pass by here and make, because, but I don't know. I'm not casting aspersions on his motives, but to me, there's something underlying it more than I'm really convinced the church is, that Christ is being labeled non-essential if we do this on a Sunday morning. To me, you've really stretched to justify something.
Just the conversation of the fact that they're using that type of language, that the church is non-essential. I just wrestle with that internally. My yuck meter just goes off, because for me, it's the people who are navigating an authentic spiritual community with one another, that are doing life alongside of each other, whether they're in a traditional Sunday morning gathering or not, that are in conversational intimacy with Christ. The church is essential to them, but it doesn't require them to have some fanciful show that, oh, we're going to oppose this meeting, or that we're going to prove that the church is essential by having a communion service. How does that show that the church is essential? I guess my question is, where does that even fall in the category of being essential?
Well, he just seems to be hurt over the idea that the liquor stores get to do their thing and the cannabis dispensaries get to do theirs. And yeah, I can say that's pretty absurd. Although alcohol drinking is up 60% in California since the coronavirus started. So maybe it is essential for some. I mean, if you want to say there is a liquor store more important than people getting together to celebrate God? Well, of course, we're going to say that's an absurd notion. But is the church the building on Sunday morning, or traversing the geographical space? And that's where you and I are going, of course it's not. The church is God's people in the earth. They're not being diminished by what's going on right now in the coronavirus. I think those who really know God are looking at things in a very different way, and open, and God will open doors through this, that as we, your word, recalibrate, as we recalibrate. In fact, you opened a new podcast this week, didn't you, Kyle?
I did. Yes,
yeah,
I did.
Yeah, on your own. So I'm going to put a link to that at the bottom of this, those that want to go hear that. But recalibration was the sense of that. This is, there's times in our life when things, we get to step back a little bit and assess, why are we really doing what we're doing? Because we get to be creatures of habit very easily. I'm just going to do my deal because I've done it. This is the way I've always done things. When that gets upset, some people get very nervous because I thrive by my routines. Others take a step back and go, huh, is this routine serve me well? Is this, am I where I want to be in my walk with Jesus? And if I'm not where I want to be, is it, and for some, I know it is, that we started this thing with the false security of, I go to a building every Sunday morning, so I'm a good Christian. To me, it's just the silliest notion in the world, and yet a lot of people believe it. And then when that gets cut off, then you find out, do I really have a connection with God? Because that's where the journey comes from. And that's where my identity as the part of the Church of Jesus Christ in the world comes from, because I belong to him, not because I go to a certain event on Sunday morning.
Yeah.
And people are going to get to recontemplate that. And I think that makes those people nervous who, for them, the business model of their income and life is this Sunday morning thing that cannot meet right now. And they're getting nervous, and they're doing outrageous things to try and keep the faithful obligated, that this is essential, that, you know, the church will be diminished if we don't do our program. And I think people need to know it's just outrageous. It's outrageously untrue. And trying to encourage people to believe it in this day and age, in this current climate, is irresponsible if you claim to be a Christian leader, a leader of God's people. And no one is, because only Jesus is that leader. But there's lots of people who think they are, and they're so worried about losing their livelihood that they're going to encourage this false idea of what the church is to keep people dependent on a machine that I think's long outlived its usefulness. I think there's better delivery systems for the life of the church than the corporate entities and the expense of those corporate entities that we've created 2,000 years later.
Even using the word essential and this whole conversation about what's essential versus what's not essential, I think the fact that that's causing unrest to people that are a part of or integrated into a institutional Sunday morning gathering, that just, to me anyway, defines obligation language versus heart language. Because the people who are living out of that and living out of community and authentic journey with Christ in their relationship to people around them, as well as their in their own personal life, yeah, they may be experiencing some dis-ease or some discomfort or in regards to the uncertainty of this, but the question of whether or not their ability to access relationship with God, or that for some reason or somehow their faith is all of a sudden being branded as unessential, I don't even think that that's a conversation. That never once has, in this whole process, has my faith journey come up as, oh, well, now it's non-essential. Oh my gosh, like the government is saying I can't meet with people, and so now my something's telling me that I'm non-essential, or that this relationship or this faith journey is non-essential. It doesn't. What the government says in regards to who I can meet with or how I can meet with them, honestly, it doesn't really tie a whole lot to how I continue to do life and do faith and do community with others.
Which is why McCoy defaults back to religious requirement. Our goal is to fulfill our religious requirement, which is not language that fits comfortably into the new covenant. If you want to harken back to the old, if you want to take out Hebrews 10:25 as you must meet together, it wasn't about a religious requirement. It was about the wisdom of not going it alone on your journey. And even now I would say to people, man, if you're isolated from being with people you'd like to be with now because this coronavirus thing, get on the phone. There's lots of ways to connect with people. Don't go alone. Now you have to physically go alone, but don't socially go alone. Don't just think this is all you and isolated. And I think the real challenge will come now as we're coming up on Easter. Sir, this is the Super Bowl of the religious establishment. This is where more people come to the building. It's kind of, you know, drop Easter eggs from helicopters and do whatever you have to do to get the kids and families in your who don't normally go to come to your deal because they're likely to stick. That's always the hope. If they come once and we're really, really good, then they'll stick. And this is Easter. Now, this is the Super Bowl, and you know, basketball already gave up March Madness. This is also the weekend of the Master Tournament. Golf's given that up. But I can imagine what's going to be said and done on this week of all weeks, because this is where these entities compete for market share. It's their most successful service of the year. It's where they get money from people who don't go to church other than once a year. It's their evangelistic outreach to preach to those who don't really committed to Jesus. And it's all of that. And it won't be there Sunday, except for people like this who are going to try and make it happen anyway, which is just scary. And to give that example on Palm Sunday for a guy who's on the city council in a city like this, I think is irresponsible, because now other pastors are going, well, hey, he got a lot of media attention. Mm-hmm. He got a lot of whatever. Their people now feel like they're on the banner wave of protecting the sensuality of Christ. Well, I want to get my church in on that too. And I can't imagine the pressure that these guys are going to feel this weekend. But no matter what stupid thing you're being asked to do by someone you love and admire, don't do it if it violates the social distancing. We need to contain this virus. And we're being told by everybody who has any medical sense at all, this is dumb stuff to do at this time, and don't fall for it, no matter how desperate people are who need it. And even Easter, get up in the morning, sit on your patio if you got weather that allows it, and welcome the risen Christ into your heart and your day, and get on your phone and tell people you love Happy Easter and talk about what the risen Christ means to them, and, you know, read the resurrection story. You don't need a building and a gathering to celebrate Easter.
No.
And celebrate the risen Christ. And even more now, we need the risen living Christ, because we don't have the false security of our institution to go to, or the ham dinner we were going to have afterwards, or the Easter egg hunt, or whatever.
Give me an example of what you and Sarah are going to do for Easter. What is kind of on your heart?
Don't ask that, man. We're bad to ask for that, because Sarah and I don't consider Easter Sunday morning as anything more significant than this morning. Then Friday morning, then Saturday morning. I mean, we're aware that we're kind of marking the death and resurrection of Jesus. We're aware of that, and that may salt into our conversations with people. Mm-hmm. But do I feel like, as a Christian, I've got to see something more in that day than I just don't. We may get up that morning and talk about, we may read the resurrection story. We're going to miss our grandkids, and daughter and son-in-law usually come over and we spend that day together, and that's not happening. So we're going to miss that. Mm-hmm. But spiritually, it's not going to make a dent in, like, I've got to do something that day to make it more holy. I just don't have that bent. I should, maybe. I didn't know it was my religious requirement, but.
Well, our family is going to be a little interesting, because this will be the first time that my family, at least my parents and some of my siblings, haven't gone to a Sunday morning gathering on Easter. And since we're talking years, if not decades. I'm actually going to be leading our family through just kind of a reflective time. We're thinking about possibly doing it all, like, Zooming in, and all the family Zooming in, because I can actually do it remotely. So I can have each family kind of guide through each one of the processes, but we don't have to get together as a family. So I've got a couple of different things that I'm going to have them do, as far as either contemplation or journaling, or a couple of little activities we're going to do. We're going to do some trivia about what they know about the last week of Jesus's life. And we're just going to enjoy some time together.
Ah, well, whatever you're doing this weekend, you know, celebrate Jesus, have a great time with him. And don't let the fact that you're not in a big group of people diminish the power of his resurrection. And celebrate it all the more, his life in you.
Thank you for traveling with us today on The God Journey. You can join this conversation by visiting thegodjourney.com.